Hey homies, on this episode of Homegrown Horror, we talk about the 18-hour crime spree performed by Anthony Lord. We also talk about one of Maine's confectionery delights. All this and more on Homegrown Horror. Hey B, how's it going?
Hey, what's up?
Oh, not much. So I've been kind of like on this baking bug lately, and I've been wanting to pick your brain on something that I've made here. It's really special. But I don't know what to call it, but so I wanted to get your feedback here, but check this out. I got this cookie. We got like a nice kind of decadent chocolate and coconut blend. And guess what? The main ingredient is parsnips.
Parsnips?
It's surprisingly sweet. You know, okay. It really does complement everything.
Give me a bite of that. Let me see.
Yeah, here you go. Try that. Ooh. Mm. Oh, yeah.
These are way better than those brownies you made. Holy shit.
Yeah, definitely better than the brownies I made, for sure. Those are awesome. Okay, so we agree they're good, but I have no idea what to call them.
Do you have any ideas? Run them by me. Let's do this.
Yeah, you know, just like first things that kind of come up to my brain here, you know, I figured like, you know, you want to like invoke some kind of essence of coolness with this, you know? So I figured like try some recognizable names, you know, and recognizable characters even, you know? So how about Joel Osteen Snackers? How's that? You like that?
No, I don't like that. That's what else do you have?
Okay. Well, I'm surprised you didn't like that. How about Tammy Faye Baker's Bites? Ooh. Now that doesn't that make you just want to munch on these bad boys? Just thinking about Tammy Faye.
I would expect that to be more of like a frosted cookie, maybe with like some blue sprinkles. Not this. What else?
All right. So in the same vein, okay, come on. Kenneth Copeland's Cookie Delights. It's a little longer title, but still, what a great character to incorporate with your cookies.
Do you want me to state the obvious or?
All right. You know what? Honestly, this is just to be able to try to corner a market. You know, if I can get a certain demographic of the market on the side, I feel like these will, you know, sell themselves basically. Okay. Well, I think this is going to be in the same vein. So here's my last option for you.
Okay.
And I think it's going to probably corner the same market.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Yeah. I got it. Little Hitlers.
Jackson, you're fucking awful at naming things.
Hello, and welcome to Homegrown Horror. Welcome listeners. We're changing things up today.
Yeah, we're in your apartment today.
Yeah, welcome to my empty office. We're in a very probably echoey room, as we can hear on the recording, but
we're trying out some different things.
Yeah, well, you know, we got the wives in the next room hanging out, doing wifely things.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, pretty much. I think they're playing something.
They're playing something, and I think they're going to make bulgogi.
Yeah.
At some point. So yes. That should be... Look forward to that.
Yeah, we're going to give some to all... We're going to send them to all of our listeners.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yes.
Just send us your address, guys. We'll send up this opping box of bulgogi. I'm Jackson, your co-host.
I am B, your co-host.
And this is Homegrown Horror, the podcast focused on Maine myths, legends, horrors, and murders and true crime. Is that it?
Yeah, I think that's about it.
Yeah, that's perfect.
I think that covers everything.
I think it's like, I don't know if it's important to do, like, mention to people what this is about.
I think if they're, well, if you're going backwards and this is your first episode that you're listening to, it matters.
Right.
Because I know at least on Apple Music, it plays the most recent one first. So if you're trying to start listening to a podcast.
Right.
Because also, this is a great time to mention my current project, which is I am actually going through,
and listening to all of the podcasts that follow us, both on Twitter and on Instagram.
That is awesome. I've only like been I've only listened to a couple, so it's nice to see. What have you been into so far?
Obviously, Macabre Family.
Yeah.
We both have listened to. The newest one that I went through and I listened to all of their episodes is called Do You Want to Watch a Scary Movie?
Oh, cool.
I really like it. I actually left them a review and I rated them because I really enjoyed myself. I really enjoyed their most recent episode, which was on Crimson Peak.
Oh, cool.
And I also really like, I like their chemistry and I also really like how they have a feminist background. So,
oh, nice.
You would love, they have an episode on Alien. You would love their episode on Alien.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. My necklace is really clacky, so hopefully it doesn't make any noise. I also have listened to A Few Bad Apples, which is about police brutality.
Ooh,
which is fascinating. Well, it's a big, it's a problem here in our country, and so it's,
they should just rename that to A Bucket of Bad Apples.
A Bucket of Bad Apples. And I also, I have a couple other ones that are on my list, but I think those are the two that I've really focused on, like, trying to get through them. And I like them so far. I think that this is a really fun project because I'm caught up on a lot of the podcasts that I normally listen to.
Right.
So this is a really great way to branch out and see what other indie podcasts are doing.
That's really awesome. I should be doing that more, like, I've been running out of episodes throughout the week, and I'll just listen to a backlog of like Two Bears, One Cave. It's the Tom Segura, Bert Kreischer podcast. It's fucking stupid.
But no, like I like this. This is a fun thing that I'm doing.
Yeah, I definitely got to check those out, and yeah, I want to listen to that Alien episode.
Oh my god, it's so good. Yeah, because I know you love Alien. There's also there's another one. I'm blanking on the name. I'm actually going to pull it up because I am endlessly fascinated by it.
We could totally hear Emily in the background.
Oh, yeah. She's loud. Oh, another one I listened to was Stoner Chicks.
Oh, yeah. That sounds funny.
Which is, kind of the seance experiment. That's one of the ones that I'm planning on doing next.
Oh, sick, dude. Yeah. Definitely. I want to check out all of these. I don't realize, looking that we have so many follows from podcasts.
Absolutely.
It's a huge
network,
you know?
Yeah, there is such a large community of podcasters that aren't sort of in like the quote-unquote main rotation. And when I say that, I don't know names of podcasts. But the ones that I think of that are like big in true crime are like Serial or My Favorite Murder or Crime Junkie. Those are the ones that usually in conversation come up a lot, but there are so many. There was actually someone on Twitter that was like, are there actually any good true crime podcasts? I can't seem to find any. And I'm like, well, do you have eyes? No offense to the person who tweeted that, but like, there are so many of us out there, and I'm including us because there are so many indie podcasts that are people who love true crime,
horror movies. We're not good, though.
But, you know, there's a taste out there for somebody.
Absolutely, yeah. There is, like, a huge wealth of, like, podcasts out there for all types of flavors. It's insane how many podcasts there are. Could say it's a saturated market.
Yeah, but at the same time, if it's a saturated market, why are there people saying, are there any to listen to?
That is also wild to me. It's fair.
And I think part of it is you have to just give it that first shot.
You do, yeah.
Because, before I started doing this, I probably wouldn't have given some of these podcasts a listen, and that's shame on me, because I would just go through and be like, meh. Being an indie podcast, you realize, oh no, that there are some really, like, even if it's not, like, AAA podcast, it's amazing to see what people are doing and what people are interested in, and it's nice because it's like, oh, you're also interested in this.
That's pretty awesome, yeah. I mean, There are so many topics you can choose from, like from the funny, comedic, or like true crime. True crime always kind of ties in with comedy almost, it feels like.
Yeah, I think that there are a couple that are like super serious. Like a good example is like Serial or Case File.
Yeah.
They're very serious. Right. And they are, Case File is presented as if you're watching like a show on like Oxygen. or something. Think of that, but... And then, yeah, usually I also... I listen to a lot of podcasts that recap those shows. Like, they recap Snapped, or they recapped Disappeared, or something like that. Because I'm like, I want the funny. Tell me about the thing, but make it funny.
Give me the funny. You want something. A little sugar. Make medicine go down. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. We can just dive in, I suppose.
You
know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, welcome to the podcast.
Welcome to the business end of the podcast.
Yeah, right.
Our podcast is a mullet.
Podcasts are a mullet?
Oh, wait, no. Yeah, we'd be there. We'd be a reverse mullet, because the party's in the front and the business is in the back. I'm an idiot. Ignore me.
I will. Don't worry.
All right. What are we doing today?
Today we're going to be talking about, well, where do you think we're going today?
We're not going to Aristocrat.
You're damn right. No, we're going God to Aristocrat.
Why? Okay. Yeah. Hi, Aristocrat.
Hi, Aristocrat. It's good to see you. It's been, I think, what, 4 episodes since we've been back to Aristocrat? Maybe. This is an unfortunate event that happened, like most of the ones we talk about. Okay. But I thought that this was... There's a lot to unpack, and it's pretty interesting.
Okay.
It is... We're talking about an 18-hour crime spree that left 2 people dead and 4 people injured. And this took place pretty recently also. So this happened around 2015, actually.
Oh, this is recent. Wow.
Very recent. Okay. I think this might... Is this the most recent one we've done? Because I think we did one. Well, what was the Smirnoff Ice one?
That's a good question.
Gotta look it up.
I know that I mean, in the Christmas episode, I did talk about some more as recent as last year.
Okay, yeah, fair.
But that partly was because it was a smaller episode, and I was doing small stories, so I didn't have to fill up time by talking about the case and law stuff.
I looked up... 2016 is actually when the Smirnoff Ice thing happened. And you know what's funny? I looked up the Smirnoff Ice murder, Maine.
You're kidding.
And guess what popped up on the second... On the second is it one. Us? It's us. Look at that. We're on the SEOs, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, seriously. Edinburgh and our Instagram popped up. So that's exciting.
Fascinating.
Yeah. Thanks, Google, I guess. Are the events of this unfortunate circumstance, this 18-hour crime spree, actually has to start 2.5 months before the actual events here?
Okay.
So, on May 5th, 2004...
That's right in between yours and Allegra's birthdays.
Really? Oh, May 5th?
Yeah, because Allegra's May 1st, You're
right,
you're May 12th, right?
19th.
Motherfucker, okay.
It's still in between, you know? It works, you know? You didn't go over, so yeah. I'm playing Price is Right.
Rules, okay.
So on May 5th, 2015, Larry Earl, a 6-month-old son to Anthony Lord, had been killed by an unknown assailant. The child died from a brain bleed and a fractured skull. During the funeral of Larry Earl Lord, Anthony said, "There is no justice in any situation like this because no one can give back what's been taken."
Pause. Unknown assailant.
The baby died, and the autopsy just revealed that there was a brain bleed and a fractured skull, but they had no information as to who caused the injury to the child.
The reason I'm asking is because you made it sound like someone broke in. What you're saying is the baby...
He
was injured. They don't know...
Who did this.
Who, how, or why.
From what it sounds like, the kid would have had to been, like, hit with something. Or smacked with something.
Not shaken.
Okay.
Because of the fractured skull. There was... Right,
actual force behind it.
Okay.
But a 6-month-old... Anthony was about 35 years old at the time of this, and his 6-month-old died.
Mm-hmm.
New father, that's a lot to deal with at that time.
Mm-hmm.
2.5 months later, Anthony Lord would go on a multi-county crime spree that would leave two men dead and four people injured. In July of 2015, Anthony conducted this crime spree that spanned across Aroostook and the Penobscot counties.
Okay.
So on July 16th, well, I guess that's 2 months after. Well, yeah, that's 2.5 months. On July 15th at 8:30 p.m. at night, Anthony burned down a bar in the town of Benedicta. Do you know where Benedicta is?
No, I'm stuck on the fact that he burned down a bar.
He burned down a barn. He started with that. And the reason is because the barn belonged to the mother of his ex-girlfriend.
Wait, you said bar or barn?
Sorry, barn.
We've done this before.
Yeah. B-A-R-N.
Because we've done this before. We did this on the Virginia Soup Picto, where I said barn, but it sounded like bar.
Yeah.
Okay, so he burns down a barn. That makes more sense to me.
He burns down a barn.
Okay.
He just leaves it smoldering, and it just lights up. It's completely engulfed in flames. Kimberly Irish, who was 55 at the time, and she has MS. She was informed about the fire actually from her neighbor. When she found out about the fire, she called her daughter Brittany Irish, ex-girlfriend to Anthony Lord. But they're just kind of unaware because after he lit the barn on fire, he drove off. He ran away.
So for them, it's an unknown arsonist has set
fire. An unknown arsonist had set fire. And this was around 8:30 at night. So many hours later, into the morning of July 17th at 4 a.m., Anthony arrived in the Silver Ridge Township, where he knocked on the door of a family friend named Carrie Mayo. Mayo?
I'd go with Mayo, the Mayo Clinic.
Yeah. Well, it'd be unfortunate because it's like, what if it's my, I don't know, whatever. Okay. He told Carrie that he had run out of gas when he had arrived, and when Carrie exited the home, Anthony then proceeded to hit him with a hammer. Yeah. He went ahead and immediately attacked him, kind of injured him. Then he dragged him back inside and tied Carrie to a chair in his own basement. And he barricaded him in the basement and left him there. He then stole a shotgun and a .22 caliber revolver, ammo, and Carrie's pickup truck. Anthony then drives back to the burnt down barn, which is pretty much burnt down at this point.
Returned to the scene of the crime, huh?
Mm-hmm. He returns to the scene of the crime, and all hell breaks loose. Actually, before he even does that, Anthony drove over to the residence of Carrie's brother and shot through the window. But he didn't hit anybody. Like, his brother was asleep and just, mm-hmm. Woke up to the sound of a gunshot, smashing a window. So then Anthony, after that, drives over back to Benedicta to the burnt down barn where Kim and Brittany are over at, Kim's house. He then took the revolver he stole and shot through the front door, immediately wounding Brittany's arm. So it just hits her in the arm and it's just kind of a flesh wound. He then entered the home and shot 8 rounds into the neck, chest, and pelvis of Brittany's boyfriend, Kyle Hewitt, who was 22 at the time. He was asleep on the couch, and Anthony just burst in and just unloads at Kyle. During this, Kyle's dead, by the way. I've heard of crazy stories where somebody survives 20 stab wounds or a bunch of gunshots, but yeah.
He was shot in multiple places that would be fatal.
Yeah, and also within very close proximity.
R.I.P. Kyle.
R.I.P. Kyle. Poor Kyle. Yeah, so.
He doesn't make
super
it.
Super dick. He just goes after the boyfriend. It's a lot of, rejection issues. Well, here.
Would he know that? Does he know that that's the boyfriend? Or is he just shooting at anybody at this point?
I think that he knows it's the boyfriend. It seems very deliberate that he would go after Kyle.
Okay.
And also just the extent of firing 8 shots mm-hmm. at Kyle is pretty intense. During that part of the altercation, though, Brittany and Kim run to the bathroom of all places in your home to run. But I get it, guys at the front door with the gun. So they run to the bathroom and Kim actually helps Brittany escape through the bathroom window. As she's trying to, though, Anthony fires into the bathroom and actually hits Kim in the shoulder. This poor lady with MS getting hit in the shoulder by the stick head.
So Kim is shot in the shoulder. Brittany is shot in the arm.
Brittany's shot in the arm, and Brittany is also escaping from the home at this time. Mm-hmm. She does successfully escape from the home and runs to the street, and she jumps into the back of a passing pickup truck, but into the bed.
So she's reenacting Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's rude of me. I'm sorry.
But so Anthony leaves Kim alone. Thank God.
Actually, quick question. Yeah, yeah. So, because this isn't a Rustic.
Yeah.
So that's probably her best bet. If they, I'm assuming they don't have any close by neighbors? Question mark.
I'm not sure about, like, how far their neighbors are. I think probably safe to assume they're in a pretty rural area. I didn't look up Benedicta.
That makes sense to me if you're trying to escape / get to somewhere where there might be more people.
Yeah. But unfortunately, as Brittany's, like, getting to the back of this truck, Anthony is already getting out of the house and is very, like, close on her tail.
So he's going after Brittany.
His intention is to go after Brittany in this moment. He actually even jumps into the back of the truck also, and they kind of tussle in the back here. The driver of the truck obviously notices two grown adults fighting in the back
of his truck.
Yeah. The driver named Carlton Eddy, who is 60 years old at the time, he then proceeds to pull into a driveway and starts slowing down. Anthony then shoots Carlton in the neck and upper back 3 times. And at that time, Anthony and Brittany leap from the back of the pickup truck. Carlton does survive, though.
Okay, you can tell I was this poor guy.
You're so nervous. You're like,
this poor guy.
This poor old man that has nothing to do with this, you know?
I mean, all... Backing up. This sucks for everybody.
Yeah.
But I think... In Carlton's shoes, it's that fear of, like, this sort of random thing could happen to you, mm-hmm. where you just accidentally end up in the crossfire of somebody's revenge plot.
Yeah, yeah. Like, especially this. Like, this guy is clearly unstable, but we'll get into that. Carlton does survive, though, thank goodness. But from this point, so... Anthony and Brittany have jumped out from the back. Anthony does kidnap Brittany and brings him back over to the house into the stolen truck that he took from
Carrie.
And then they drive off. In the middle of driving off, the police are actually successfully pursuing Anthony and a chase goes down. Anthony is firing shots at oncoming traffic as he's speeding around different streets here. He's also shooting at law enforcement. He does shoot at a police officer, and he does actually successfully evade pursuit.
Did someone call the police?
Not at this time, but...
I'm just trying to piece together how law enforcement is.
I believe Carlton probably phoned in the police.
Okay, so that's what I was... Yeah. You're right, because he survived, so it's possible.
He does survive.
Okay.
And there could have been reports of, like, yeah, I heard gunshots, like, near my house. But the point is, police were already trying to find somebody.
Yeah.
Then they came back. There might have also been a leftover kind of search from the fire, because they were probably looking for the arsonist.
And you might as well go for the guy that's shooting.
Yeah, it's like... I've got my money's on the guy shooting people.
Yes.
I think he's responsible for this barn burning.
I don't know. Maybe he's probably just an innocent dude just shooting at traffic, you know? He's real bored up in Aroostook. Yeah.
Not much to do than shoot on incoming
traffic.
He does successfully evade police during the chase, and he drives into a woodlot off the road. At the woodlot, he encounters two men, Kevin Tozier, who's 58, and Clayton McCarthy, who's 54. And they're just, like, working on wood, you know, early in the morning.
That's right. This is early in the morning.
Yeah. This is, like, at this point, this is around, like, probably 5:30, getting closer to 6 in the morning.
This is really early.
Yeah, really early in the morning.
I don't know why I was thinking it was, like, around 11.
Oh, yeah. No,
that's sort of where my brain was. This is early. Okay.
I mean, he started at like 8:30 burning a barn
and
down.
He's been continuing from there.
And then at 4 was when he started like committing a violent crime.
Yes.
And from there, it's just been nonstop. So he drives into the woodlot and encounters these two guys. And he asks if any of them have a cigarette and a phone that he can use. And then one of the guys, I can't remember who, I didn't write it down, but, you know, one of them actually notices that Brittany has the injury in her arm and says, "Hey, what's up with that? Are you all right?" And because of that question, Anthony immediately points his gun and he shoots Kevin 3 times, killing him.
It sucks because you want to be the person that helps.
Yeah.
So bad.
Yeah.
And Kevin,
it could have been totally innocent too.
Like, yeah, he could have been like, "Hey, you good?" You know, and
I mean, it does not look good with that situation. No. Brittany probably looks terrified. Anthony probably looks insane. I'm sure that they were kind of like suspicious of something going on. But absolutely, it could have been a totally innocent, oblivious question.
Right. And I mean, to a degree, it was oblivious. He didn't know that this guy has been shooting off all day. Yeah.
Yeah. But he shoots Kevin, kills him. Clayton runs away and gets shot once in the back. But he survives. So Clayton was also able to call 911.
I know you gave us the spoiler alert that only two people die.
So now you know everybody's dead.
Everyone who dies is dead.
Everybody who dies is dead now. So we're all past the murdering. Now we're
we're past the murdering, but not past the rest of the violence.
Now the shoosting will begin. But Anthony steals another woodlot from the
another truck from the woodlot.
Steals another truck from the woodlot. Can't talk. And return to Aroostook, where he proceeded to break into a couple different camps and homes and steals random shit. No, yeah, he just breaks into camps and homes, steals stuff. He stole a 4-wheeler, like ATV, and another gun.
Does he just load that up into the truck?
I don't know. I think he does. Like,
that's a very odd thing to steal when you're on the run, but he also,
I'm not even kidding, but the court documents I was reading that was describing all this evidence also said he stole a 4-wheeler, another gun, and other items. I'm like, can't be bothered to talk about this. Probably money, ammo, like other shit. Yeah. He's like, I don't know. He stole a bunch of stuff.
None of them have quite the price tag as the ATV.
Yeah, no, he's just like, of note, this guy had a 4-wheeler. So he goes through this, steals a bunch of shit, still has Brittany. He then goes to his uncle's house, where he finally surrenders. He just surrenders. He just stops. I guess maybe he had a conversation.
To his uncle?
He went to his uncle's house, yeah, back in Aroostook.
And he's like, okay, you can call the police, I'm done.
There was, I think, there was a conversation between the uncle and Anthony, and I think that was the point where he decided to give up.
Okay.
Just stop. But 18 hours, spanning like 8:30 at night to the morning here. Yeah. And he just stops after killing 2 people, stealing a bunch of stuff, and just going on this crazy
spree. Kidnapping someone.
Kidnapping somebody.
Shooting at least 4 or 5 people.
Yeah, but
shooting at.
As far as, like, the total of crimes that he's committed within this time, the documents that they started with, the crimes that they started with, it was 2 murders, obviously. Mm-hmm. And then 12 other crimes, which include, stealing cars, kidnapping, stealing guns, not having a license to operate a gun. Just everything that they could find on this guy.
So they end up trying to throw the book at this guy.
Absolutely. And he does eventually cave. So while waiting to stand trial, Anthony initially decided to plead not guilty to any of the crimes. I know.
Sir.
And even in 2016, he moved to suppress evidence obtained during a police interview of him. Guess what that interview was about? Him describing all his crazy fucking crimes. I love this. Like, a lot of the stories we've been covering have the guy saying, "Oh, you know that time where we just sat down and I described everything that happened? I want to throw that out.
I don't want anybody to know that I said those things.
Yeah, I was just
don't
like,
tell my mommy.
It's like, geez, you think? It's like, why'd you commit? Why'd you comment in the first place? It's a weird.
It's probably a hindsight is 20/20 thing when you realize that. Oh, wait a minute, those things that I actually said will be used against me. You know, like when they Mirandized me and they said that. No, they are doing this for real.
Oh, you guys weren't kidding? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
2017, June of 2017, he was deemed competent enough to stand trial. And because he was suppressing to, like, remove this evidence, a whole other court has to, like, meet on that to see whether or not they can.
Yeah.
They can throw that out. But during the trial to review that, Anthony decides to just plead guilty to everything. And in sort of an exchange as well, they decide to remove, like, 3 different crimes. I forget which ones, but yeah.
Probably some of the lesser crimes.
Yeah, probably like the federal stuff, maybe. And so in July of 2017, the court had argued how to charge Anthony because of the list of crimes he had. To the point where they acknowledged also, like, he is a grieving father. He is dealing with a lot of emotional stress and he has PTSD from the death of his child.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get to that. But because of the
numerous
crimes.
Yeah, I have lots
crimes,
of questions,
yeah.
But I'm waiting until you get there.
Yeah.
Because I am thinking you might answer my questions.
It's just kind of like, a lot of his defense was related to him experiencing intense emotional stress from the loss of his child.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think necessarily that that's really that important to this character. But they acknowledged this throughout the court. They did take that into consideration. But just because of the weight of everything that he did in that night, they threw him a basic life sentence. They didn't add anything else.
Yeah.
Any special punishments, they just put him into a life sentence. The 2 murders alone, they have that evidence enough to pin it on him. Of course,
yeah.
He would just get a life sentence alone from that.
Yeah.
But this is not the first time that Anthony has committed a crime. So, he has a history. He has a criminal history. So it's like, I get it that he's experiencing all this dread, but also he's been on the end of the court throwing the book at him before.
He
assaulted a corrections officer, and he's also listed on the main sex offender registry.
I would like to point out that this sounds like my favorite thing, which is escalation.
Yeah.
You know the thing that happens when people commit crimes and then they move on to do more serious crimes? Yes.
This sounds like
that's it. What that sounds like. This does not sound like grief. This sounds like he had it in him.
Mm-hmm.
He had it in him.
Yeah.
And so here we are.
Additionally, Brittany brought letters that she wrote describing how Anthony had raped her several times before committing all these crimes. So leading up to this. So talking again about escalation.
Yeah.
All these other violent crimes that he's potentially committing. Now that is evidence that was submitted after the fact. That was a letter that she brought to the court. And actually they did sue the local police as well because Brittany and Kim saying they weren't adequately protected from Anthony because of all these concerns and all this.
So this is something that she brought up to them before?
I believe, like, after the fact, and then they went into a suit to sue the detectives after Anthony had the book thrown at him.
Okay.
But what the whole start of this was his child dying, supposedly.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens there? Anthony, there is a sort of a kind of an open book almost here, but there was a conviction there. So a family friend named Jesse Mackin of Millinocket was found guilty of manslaughter for killing the child. They didn't have much evidence, but they just kind of pinned. It looks like they put the evidence on him that he had committed the murder. It was a lot of he said, she said. In this situation, no one can, like, outright say,
I'm also just...
Point the finger.
You know, I've got some little... But,
it's a little...
interesting that they're going with him instead of... If we're just going to throw the book at somebody, there's a part of me that's like, there's an obvious choice here in the room, ladies and gentlemen.
It does seem like it could potentially be...
The father, who has a history of violent crimes, who then goes on to commit more violent crimes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really surprised that they didn't...
Part of this was Jesse was a ex-boyfriend of the person that birthed Larry.
Okay.
And this was him supposedly acting out. But other people's testimony says that he actually did care about Larry quite a bit and was looking after him a lot before. And...
Then
didn't
my next...
seem to have any violence in him.
Because that's
to do
my
this.
Next question is, does Jesse have a violent past?
It doesn't seem like he does. And
yeah. I mean, again, maybe they've got better evidence and that we just are not aware of. But I'm just saying, like, out of the two options that you've given me, one of them makes more sense than the other one. And that's not the one that they went with.
I know. And again, like. I didn't look as much into this case, so guys, if you're screaming at me saying, like, you forgot this one key piece of evidence that I know everything about, it's like, sorry, I'm more focused on Anthony right now, but I am left with the question of whether or not, was Anthony more related to the death of his own child than we realize, and is Jesse being pinned in the wrong? Who knows? Jesse could have committed the crime.
Right, and that's, I'm just saying that, based on what you've given me in the sense that, like, there's not a lot of evidence, and it seems to be a lot of circumstantial evidence.
But
it's interesting that that's where they went to.
Well, to be fair, as far as timelines are concerned, that they were been provided, Jesse is the one that was in proximity to the child dying, and Jesse says that he claims he didn't commit the crime, and just simply he was caring for the child when the child's body went limp. That kind of testimony doesn't really hold up to me, especially with the autopsy.
That's also not the first time that, because there was the crime, because I had mentioned on the Christmas crimes episode that I was going to cover actually almost a identical crime to this different person, but it was that the father found the baby and was like, the child just went limp. He was fine and then went limp, and then they found out that she had suffered spinal injuries and all of this other stuff. That seems to be a very common, that seems to be a common thing that people say when a child, it seems more often than not, when a child is injured in this way, that's usually what they say is, they just went limp.
Yeah.
And again, I don't know if, you know, are you trying to protect somebody? There's a lot of things that could go into that, but I think that's really interesting.
It is interesting, and I mean, like, who knows? But that's my tale for today.
Oh, that's it? Oh,
that's
shit.
It. Yeah, no, that was it. I know, we, like, covered so much.
As somebody who's experienced a lot of grief in my 27 years on this earth and being around people who are grieving...
Yeah.
Generally, you don't just go murder people if you're experiencing grief.
I'm with just you. But I'm with you, like, on the escalation kind of thought. Like,
absolutely. And maybe he escalated because he was distraught. But it's interesting that he's going after people who aren't involved.
Mm-hmm.
My thought would be, if you're experiencing grief, he might go after the child's mother.
Mm-hmm.
For not protecting the child from Jesse, if that's what he believes.
Mm-hmm.
Or other people related to Jesse to get revenge.
Yeah.
He goes after this ex-girlfriend who he has already allegedly assaulted.
Yes. He's acting out for sure. I also want to just put it back to... Like, he does eventually plead guilty to all these crimes, and he writes apology letters to all the victims, part of which also say, like, I cannot take back what I've done.
Mm-hmm.
And what's so stupid, like, unfortunate, and he said it himself, it's like, you can't take back what's been done. He said it at his child's own funeral. Then he proceeds to rob two people of their lives. Like, how fucking deaf-tone are you?
Not only that, but changing the lives of the other people. Yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
But changing the lives of the people around them. I can tell you, like, the fact that Kim was shot, she has MS.
Yeah.
I don't think her body's going to heal properly.
Probably not. I didn't look into it. She was still alive when...
Right, but it's going to change... Yeah. You know it's gonna.
Yeah.
And then with Brittany, that changes her. Well, and also Carlton, the guy who they got into his car.
The guy that got shot. Yeah.
It completely changes the way that they're going to interact with people and their sense of security and their sense of safety.
Clayton McCarthy, who got shot in the woodlot, and his coworker or friend died next to him.
You're not gonna want to go out to work again.
No, for sure. Yeah.
Or it
people's sense of safety you're robbing, their lives, their interactions, their ability to cope.
So that's why
it's
like, okay, so your grief does not excuse this.
Exactly.
If that's what it really is.
He did try to bring this back to the courts at some point and say, the judge didn't properly look at how much I was grieving in the past. And
no.
To that, I say bullshit.
No.
Yeah.
No, just putting it out there, like... My grandparents have lost both of their sons.
Yeah.
And their grief has not made them commit unspeakable acts.
Yeah.
And they had much longer time than this guy had with his kid. I mean, yes, it's a child, a child, and you grieve the possibility and blah, blah, blah. But, like, people lose their kids and don't murder other people. They don't shoot other people. They do not kidnap a girl that they have raped.
Yeah.
Before. And again, he has a history. I don't give a fuck. He has a history. Like, yeah. I'm not going to be like, oh, yes, you were... No. Sir. Sorry.
But he is now serving his sentence. He's obviously still in prison.
Yeah. He's not getting out.
No, definitely not. That is the... But I got to say, even though this is horrific, I did find it to be a very interesting case. And I found it to be like... the moment of an intense psychological break, potentially, in an individual.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate that people died, but it is also fascinating to look at this moment and think, what the fuck was this guy thinking?
Did they just bring up the grief, or did they try and say that he had other mental illness? Or were they really just trying to hammer home the fact that he lost his 6-month-old?
They were really trying to hammer home the grief aspect. And they did, you know, comment that he was competent enough to stand trial. They did a psych background on him. And his defense literally was just like, this is a grief-stricken father that wouldn't have done these crimes if, you know, his child died.
But...
or didn't die.
Also, again, because again, I don't know... He obviously was in jail because he assaulted a corrections officer. I don't know how long ago he had sexually assaulted Brittany.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm assuming that was before his 6-month-old was born, that's just me making the assumption. But like, if you're saying like he wouldn't have done these crimes if this hadn't happened, then how do you explain the crimes that he did before this incident happened?
That's also something that is
because this was been 2 months, 3 months.
I'm totally with you. It's just kind of like, okay, this guy's clearly, like, not a good person, though, because he has this history of violence as well. It's it's just kind of funny that it's like, okay, we're going to go with, like, grief-stricken father. It's like, no, you're a piece of shit anyway.
That
like,
moment when people are surprised that someone with a violent history does more violent crimes.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like, that's a hard conversation, you know?
It is a hard conversation, because you can get help. If you get help and you... you know, because there are a lot of people who commit violent crimes because of mental illness. If you get help, if you are able to learn coping skills and do cognitive behavioral therapy and can afford that sort of thing, then yeah, maybe you are able to, you know, work out your anger issues or your issues with violence against the people that, you know, that if it's against women, if it's against whatever. But... I don't know, man. Like, if you're committing... But it's sort of like with Jimmy. You know, he perpetrated violence against women from a young age.
Mm-hmm.
are we surprised that he ended up murdering women? I'm not surprised.
By the way, if you're just jumping in, that's the James Hicks episode we're talking about.
Yes, sorry.
That was last week. Was that last week or 2 weeks
ago? It was 2 weeks ago. Okay. I was trying, I couldn't remember his last name. And so I just remember we now have this running joke of the Jimmies.
Don't trust a Jimmy.
Don't trust a Jimmy.
That's too friendly of a name. Jimmy down the street.
Yeah, thanks for this was very interesting.
I thought it was like I was looking up a lot of different stories and ideas. I actually have one that I think you should do. We'll talk off mic about it. But I think it would be more appropriate if you speak about it, is all I'll say. So
fascinating.
Okay. That might come up in the future, but yeah. But anyway, we want to do a Mainism?
Hey, hey, it's a Mainism.
So this is actually something that your wife sent to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it is fucking wild to me. I had no idea that this was, first off, an actual candy product native to Maine, nor was it a real thing. And I'm talking...
It's like we made it up.
I was like...
Considering it was funny because your wife texted my wife, who texted you.
So Emily came up with the idea first and didn't tell me.
Well, because she was saying that she wanted to make potato candy.
Oh, and then like was like, that's a thing.
Yes. Yep.
So freaking funny. So anyway, we're talking about Needhams. Needhams?
Yeah, spelled Needham. Needham.
Needhams. We're talking about Needhams, which is a little kind of... It's almost like an almond
they're
joy.
Think of it as like... It is like an almond joy. It's a little square.
Mm-hmm.
It is potato, coconut, covered in chocolate.
Which sounds fucking great. Yeah. I think I love almond joys. I'll like just pop those. Like if I have a whole bag, I'll just go through it, tear ass through that bag. And Needham sounds actually kind of good.
Yeah.
It is a little uncomfortable to think of like potato as a filling.
It's not. I've never had a Needham, but I used to sell them because I used to work at the candy store downtown in Old Orchard Beach. And that was one of the products that we had.
Never tried it?
I'm not a big coconut person.
Okay, yeah.
Also...
Oh, yeah, that would kill you, right?
I am hypothetically allergic to coconut. It shows up on my blood work, but I have had, like, coconut oil, and I've been fine.
Uh-huh.
So it's one of those ones that typically, if it's super present, I'll avoid it.
Yeah. Are you looking up the wiki article?
Yeah.
About Needham. This guy's nuts.
This is hilarious. It's hilarious to me.
He was like a sailor.
Actually, I'm pulling up. Right? This is from NPR.
Okay.
Yeah, because the other thing that's interesting is like I forget often that Maine has a big export of potatoes.
Yeah. Like the whole north is just a bunch of potatoes. Farms. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is...
It's a good climate for it.
Mm-hmm, which is why we got the New Sweden coffee poisonings is because arsenic is used.
Oh yeah, yeah,
with
yeah.
Potatoes. It's a mainstay for mm-hmm. potato farmer. A mainstay for potato farmers. But something that's super interesting about this is it was created by a candy maker in Maine, and it was something that they started and that was their specialty.
Yeah.
But now a lot of different Maine candy companies make them. Yeah. I don't know if they just didn't trademark it or because they're all called Needhams.
I think that they just probably didn't trademark it. So from what I remember about the guy, he was this young, he started off as a sailor. He went to, I believe he was doing a tour or something around the Pacific Ocean where at some point he actually got captured by a tribe, a tribe of cannibals. And was able to kind of like...
I'm going to say quote-unquote cannibals.
Quote-unquote cannibals. He said it was cannibals. Who knows? But he was eventually able to like get his way out of being harmed by this tribe. And they covered him in tattoos, I believe?
I think so.
Yeah. So he had all these tattoos on him.
So
Wait, no. I might be fucking up the story.
You are. Because that is true. But what you need to know is this guy has nothing to do with the candy.
He doesn't have anything to do with the candy?
No.
Who made it then?
I'm trying to find the candy. I can't remember the candy company that.
He just like made the idea?
Nope.
He didn't like produce it?
Nope, not even that.
Why the fuck did the article that was get sent like talk about this guy for like 2 pages?
Because. Why can't I fucking find this? Who created this?
All right, I'm going to look it up on my end too. Because I had it. It's probably in my texts. I have the receipts.
The recipients. Okay, that's what it is. CV's Candies.
CV's Candies?
CV's Candies created this.
Okay.
And Mr. CV, he created this thing with, so it's chocolate-covered coconut cream with potato.
Okay.
Specifically, that's what this is. And everybody's tasting it. They're like, this is pretty good. By the way, this is in 1872. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. I like that. What do we call it? And someone says, why don't we name it after that preacher, Needham?
That's so fucking weird. Why?
He has nothing to do with Maine at all.
Just like, this guy's a cool dude. Let's
correct.
Name the candy.
So yeah, so he is a preacher. He's an evangelist preacher.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the article has all of this stuff about him.
Yeah. And
is because this is a really interesting guy, but what the fuck does he have to do with potato and coconut?
But okay, so here's the weirdness. This is the weird thing that that stood out to me. Okay. In his like obituary in 1902, yeah, he's this evangelical mm-hmm. preacher. He's an Irish immigrant. When he was 10 years old, he was on board a ship bound for South America and was tortured by the captain and tattooed against his will during the journey. So he was tattooed by the captain on the ship.
Yes.
As a 10-year-old. What the fuck? but then Needham was taken ashore to Patagonia, where he claimed, as a 10-year-old, to be taken captive by cannibal Indians. That's his words. Who are going to make a feast of him. But they stopped when they saw his tattoos. And he said that apparently they thought he was like some kind of deity. Sounds like bullshit.
Actually, you know what's really interesting? This for people that are big fans of Herman Melville, who wrote, you know, that guy kind of popular book, Moby Dick, you know, just
never
sort
of
popular.
Heard of it.
He had another book called Typee,
mm-hmm.
T-Y-P-E-E. And that's sort of, that, not necessarily the premise, but this book was way more popular at the time it was written because it's this guy who goes to this island, gets captured by this tribe, and all the women want his dick.
Okay.
So he just has sex with all of the women on the island.
Cool. Makes sense.
But because they're like, he is a deity.
Okay.
They see him as a deity. So there is that sort of mindset in the 1800s where you're living out this white man fantasy. And yeah, so then he comes back to America and he travels all around, but I think he is more in Massachusetts, but he's a very popular preacher.
Yeah.
So hypothetically they could be like, oh yeah, that guy's kind of cool. Like he's kind of popular around here, but he has nothing to do with
nothing to do with candy.
That's why that. I was letting you tell the story, but I'm like, yeah, he has nothing to do with the candy.
Well, anyway.
But yeah, so CV's created this and then it caught on. And like I said, a lot, like when I worked at Dickinson's, we had both Asher's and Haven's candy, which are both very popular here in Maine. I think Haven's is Maine-based. I don't know if Asher's is Maine-based.
Gotcha.
But I also know someone who used to work in the Haven's factory in Westbrook.
So it's just so widespread.
Yeah.
Well, it makes sense then, like, why I guess it's not really trademarked or anything.
Yeah.
That's so widespread that so many companies make this.
It's just they all call them Needham. They're all called Needhams. It's not trademark. It would be like, for example, you know, you could get something that is like a Snickers bar, mm-hmm. but it can't be called Snickers.
No, because you get your ass sued.
But yeah, I, and this is, you know, it's not that long ago, the 1870s, like they could have trademarked it. I just don't know why they didn't.
Rude.
Yeah, I just don't know why they didn't.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
I have no idea either.
But yeah, potato candy.
Potato candy. It sounds really good, actually. Like,
yeah, no, I think if you're into almonds or mounds, you'd be into it. And I wanted to try and buy the, like, I wanted to get some for you to try. I checked on GoPuff. They didn't have anything. I don't feel like leaving to go get them.
You don't need to. Yeah, we can try to figure out sometime. Put it on a Patreon episode.
Yes, where we'll try some
various.
Well, you can try Moxie. Things. You can try Needhams. You could. You know, we'll try like 7 different flavors of Whoopie Pies. Jackson's like, oh, this sounds awful.
This sounds terrible. No. How is this content?
Again, I think a lot of our Patreon episodes are either going to be A, ghost hunting, or B, feeding you main items.
It sounds great. I love the direction we're having with all of this. we should like do also main attractions.
Absolutely.
Go there. I think there would be a little bit more paperwork involved with that.
Maybe.
But, you know, yeah, we could figure it out. Anyway, yeah, that's our episode.
So, yeah, hopefully you enjoyed as much as we did. Again, we're trying something new. Mm-hmm. We're in a new location. We're trying out some new things. My microphone shit the bed.
Yeah, we were like trying to get both of the mics to work, and it was just... A lot of malfunctions were happening at this time, but we had a mixer. We were trying to work it out. We'll get it nailed down here pretty soon.
Yeah, and we thank you for coming along on this journey with us as we learn about sound and mixing. And hopefully we'll give you a better product as time goes on, because we love you so much.
We love you, listeners.
We love you.
Thanks. We'll leave it there.
Yep. Thank you for joining us today.
Love you.
Bye! You can reach out to us on our Twitter at HGHpod or on our Instagram at HomegrownHorrorPod. We hope to see you again soon.